B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Are you ready for this? This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This morning I said, I'm just going to go division by division and rank the quarterbacks, not the teams. And you tell me if I just ranked quarterbacks per division, is it possible this is how it's going to end up looking? AFC East, Josh Allen, Tua, Mac Jones, and Zach Wilson. Tua Mac Jones is a coin flip. I've called Tua a left-handed Mac Jones. I think he's slightly better. Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets.
Hour three, it's our buddy Colin Coward. Tua Mac Jones, he says, coin flip. He calls Tua the left-handed Mac Jones. Sounds like a Murray line.
The left-handed Mac Jones.
Is he being too hard on Mac Jones? Does he have that right? Are we overrating? Is Robert overrating Mac Jones and what he can be in year two, etc.? Your thought.
So I think he's generally got it right. And when I say generally, I think it's close. I think it's close. And I'll tell you why. Ultimately, I lean Jones. But what he's saying is they're the same player. And I agree. The only reason I would take Jones over Tua, the size. Jones is a little bit bigger.
6'3 to 6'1.
Right. So, and Tua's not really 6'1, and I question whether Jones is 6'3.
Jones ain't 6'3. So, right. 6'2 to 6'even.
Yeah, I think they're basically both an inch shorter than they're listed. And so, ultimately, I'll go with the guy who's a little bit bigger because I think he's going to be able to make more throws. But they're not that far off. They're comparable players.
Yeah, I think both of these guys are good and competent, but they're not game breakers, so I don't think he's too far off. I, too, would prefer Mac Jones to Tua just because I have kind of an anti-lefty bias, and he is shorter. But Tua's got more mobility. But overall, are either of those guys going to be the sole reason that their respective teams win their games? And I don't think so.
Well, here's what I think. That if this is really a conversation we're having, you are porked. You're porked. Not good enough. Right, for the reason Murray said. Mac Jones better be a reason they win games. And if you're asking me, I've got Mac Jones greater than Tua, like substantially. And I think Mac Jones is going to be far more ready to lead you to win singularly than Tua. That's what I think. That's what I hope. That's what it better be. If it's not, if he is just the left-handed, the right-handed Tua, you're porked.
Mm-hmm.
Not good enough.
Okay, so let me ask you the question a different way. Would you rather have Tua with his weapons or Mac Jones with his weapons?
That's a fine bit of facilitation, Tonto.
Thank you.
Because I was going to do the same thing.
I'll beat you to it.
Well, my bit of facilitation was going to be this. Who's going to have a better year?
Tua.
Right.
Just because of what he's surrounded by.
The same thing. That's the same.
Mike, look at Miami's weapons. Look at them. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Parker, Cedric Wilson, Mike Gesicki, Raheem Mostert in the backfield now, and Chase Edmonds, a third down back, the kid from Arizona. And a coach who is a quote-unquote offensive innovator off the McVay tree.
Yeah, because one of those guys is going to end up like the Debo Samuel type. So there'll be some cheap yards that will get, you know, that Tua will get that will be drop passes and sideways passes that are screens, but you know, he's got the talent around him to do just that.
And Murray, I bet you it's more than one of those guys. I think that because Mike McDaniel is there now, you are going to have a scenario where Waddle's in the backfield sometimes. Sometimes it's Tyreek Hill. I think you're going to have rotating players there.
Yeah, you'll see sweeps with Mostert. There's going to be all kinds of crazy stuff.
You're going to have all kinds of matchup issues with that Miami offense.
Oh, you mean because they have actually legit offensive coaching down there?
Yes.
Never mind the talent around the quarterback. They actually have someone with vision offensively and can scheme it and coach it. Interesting.
I'll take their quarterback with their skilled players over yours.
Tua is the left-handed Mac Jones?
Tua Mac Jones is a coin flip. I've called Tua a left-handed Mac Jones.
Coin flip.
Mac Jones is a coin flip.
Both are subpar.
Murray does a good Colin Coward. Does, not easy to do.
Yeah. Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets.
So I have the Pats third in the division, too.
Zach Wilson got a little bit better towards the end of last year, too.
And look out for the Jets. I agree. You know, you two, the exercise we just did, that was 6-11. So when we went through the schedule there, that's 6-11.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Bill gets fired for that.
Oh, yeah, 6-11, he's
gone.
He's done.
Say hello to Sean Payton.
In Miami.
Ooh, I like that idea.
And they're not going to fire this whippersnapper after 1 year. And no, so both things can't be equal, right? Like, if you go 6-11, that means the Dolphins have beaten you. It means the Dolphins are in second place. Right. That means Mike McDaniel will have succeeded. And so he has to stay.
Unless the Jets have a great year.
Okay. But, you know, Tua Mack, so far in their careers, Tua Tagovailoa, 13-8 as a starter, 66% completion percentage, 27 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, 88.8 rating. Mac Jones, 10-8, including the postseason, 10-8, 65% completion, 24 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, almost identical, 91.3 rating. Statistically, they're very close.
Yeah, it is. It's almost a dead heat. And I know what Patriots fans are going to say. Yeah, but Mac's only been in the league 1 year. They've played essentially the same number of games. It's a few games apart.
So Tua, 21 games, Mac, 18.
Right. So Tua didn't start till halfway through his rookie year, and he also got hurt. So the number of games is not that different. I think it's close. I do. And again, I lean Mac Jones. But if you're to say to me, okay, you know, put the list of weapons out there, and if you want Miami's weapons, you got to take Tua. I would take Miami.
And I'm going to throw in the coaching. Okay? Who would you rather have? Tua and what he's surrounded by, again, pass catchers, talent, and coaching, or what Mac Jones is surrounded by?
Miami.
So I think that's fair. I'd rather have Mac Jones. I think he's going to be a superior passer and a superior NFL quarterback.
Tua Mac Jones is a coin flip.
I disagree, Colin. And if it's a coin flip, you're porked. It's already over.
Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets.
Pro Football Focus has... Jones ranked 11th in the NFL, you know, just last year, PFF grade of 80.4. Tua Tagovailoa, 25th, 68.3. So according to the nerds there at PFF and the advanced, whatever they're doing there, whatever their formula is, they have Mac Jones as a, you know, pretty substantially superior guy. Mm-hmm. Not a coin flip, Colin. Not a coin flip. And I feel that way, too.
Okay, was Jones the 11th best quarterback in the league last year?
Yeah, he was around there.
No. Yeah. Too high.
10 to 15. Well, we didn't do it because we just cut off the list. You have the list?
Yeah, I have it in front of me.
Okay, go ahead.
Who's Bills, Dolphins,
No, not that list.
So we're going in order, right?
Yeah, who's 12?
Okay, 12 is, actually Patrick Mahomes and Jones were tied at 11.
So fine, okay, go ahead, 12.
13, Derek Carr.
I'd rather have Derek Carr.
Coin flip between Derek Carr and Mac Jones.
Derek Carr was better last year.
Okay, 14 and 15, according to Pro Football Focus, were Jalen Hurts and Jacoby Brissett.
I'd rather have Mac Jones over both those guys.
Me
of course.
Too. Matt like Ryan, Hurts. 16.
Same.
Taysom Hill, 17.
Same.
Jameis Winston, 18.
Same. Sure.
Russell Wilson, 19.
No.
Okay, fine.
Bridgewater, 20.
Nope.
Yeah, Mac Jones.
Daniel Jones, 21.
No.
Garoppolo, 22.
Mac Jones.
Close, but Mac Jones.
Wentz, 23.
Mac Jones.
Lamar Jackson, 24.
Lamar Jackson.
Jones was better last year.
But who do I want?
And then Tua.
No, where he ranks in the league last year. So
Josh Allen, Tua, Mac Jones, and Zach Wilson.
No, stop it, Colin. I think he's properly rated 10 to 15. Is there anyone ahead of him that shouldn't be there? Kirk Cousins was 6.
So, okay, so Cousins was 6, but I would say overall Cousins right now is a better quarterback.
Yeah, me too.
Jones.
Ryan Tannehill.
8th.
So, would you rather have Mac Jones or Ryan Tannehill?
Mac Jones.
Okay, me too.
Yeah.
He's 10 to 15, guys. No matter how often we slice this up and dice it up and try and you know, coerce it, Murray. It feels too high, but it's not. It feels too high, but it's not.
Okay, so here's the other thing I wonder about these PFF ratings. Because, again, whenever they go against my argument, I question them.
No, it's true. Whenever the stats don't match, it's just, well, use your eyeball stats are for losers. When they suit your argument, well, look at the stats.
So I understand the schedule is the schedule is the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You had two 50-point games against the Jets and Jackson.
So does PFF factor in the DVOA and the strength of schedule and that sort of thing?
I don't know the answer to that, but those feel like kind of scrimmages to me. Like, I want to throw those out.
Okay, so here's the point. And it all wraps into one big bow. Robert Kraft expects a lot from the team. He's isolated Bill. He's sided with the fans, the mob, over the football program. He shares your frustration over their lack of success, okay? He set Bill up, I think. And I think he set him up with a pretty tough ask, win a playoff game this year. Okay, and how are they going to do it? Robert Kraft goes on and on about the year two of the quarterback and how high he is on Mac Jones. Are they putting too much on Mac Jones? Are they overrating Mac Jones? If that's what they're banking on, are they going to be satisfied with that? That's that. Okay, your calls at 617-779-0985 right after these words.
Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The best analysis.
Forget about what's being said. Everyone's ripping someone for something somewhere.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
On these young quarterbacks, the good ones in the second year have usually grown a great deal. And I think I'm a big fan of Mac Jones. I think, see how hard he works. And he wants everything to go right, and he puts the time and energy, and his personality is a team guy. So we have a chance, because without a good coach and a good quarterback, no matter how good the other players are, I don't think you can win consistently. And hopefully, I believe we have both, you know, outstanding coach and a good young prospect at quarterback.
I think they're putting a lot on Jones' shoulders, which, you know, it's quarterback position. There's a lot on your shoulders, obviously. However, I think they're lumping him in, Maz, with these second-year guys like Joe Burrow, who went to the Super Bowl in his second year, or Pat Mahomes, who won a Super Bowl in his second year, or even Justin Herbert, who had a jump in some respects as a second-year quarterback, or, I don't know, I'm sure there's some others, but
even historically, like I think Montana in his second year, like, you know, I'm just picking names out of my hat.
But I think like the elite of the elite,
mm-hmm.
Is that what Mac Jones is?
No.
Are they putting a little too? So this is Joe Burrow. This is what we can expect. Is that what they're expecting?
Okay. But again,
is that what they're banking on?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is what they're banking on.
That's quite a gap.
Mike,
again, talking about a spread. That's quite a spread between the left-handed Tua, the right-handed Tua. Go ahead, Murray. I'm
the
sorry.
Right-handed Tua. It's a coin flip.
And, you know, he's Joe Burrow and Pat Mahomes. Boy, that's quite a spread. Who's right? Who's wrong? What's it closer to? I think look, I take him over Tua. I don't think it's a coin flip, but he's closer to Tua than he is Mahomes or Burrow, isn't he?
So I agree. Okay, I agree. But I also think that as constituted right now, boy, they're asking him to do an awful lot. And that, so this is one of the central issues to this whole thing to me, is they are putting the kid in a position to fail.
And they're asking him to do it with what? Nelson Agholor and Matt Patricia?
In an offense that seems like they're not going to be running as much. Again, they're going away from the fullback, is the report from their former fullback, Jakob Johnson, who's now with the Raiders. So what, you're going to go five wide? Is that going to be it? He's going to be throwing more?
And maybe that's why they're looking to move on from Damian Harris. I mean, I say they're looking to move on. They brought Fournette in here, and then he ended up signing with Tampa the next day. But Fournette, in theory, can catch it. Russ Stevenson, in theory, can catch it. Harris really hasn't factored into the pass game.
Okay. Your thoughts, Dan, in Worcester.
Tua, Mac Jones, and Zach Wilson.
Thank you, Colin. Dan, what do you think?
So don't put too much on a Chris Collinsworth, because he lost out Michaels, and, you know, he's probably just...
Colin Coward, not Chris Collinsworth.
Get it right.
Either way, go ahead, Dan.
My thing is, I think that Mac Jones is in a more trouble to take a step back in year two, and I think Zach Wilson is more up to take a leap. And if that happens, do you think the Patriots have to go back to the drawing board if now three quarterbacks or almost three quarterbacks in their division are ahead of this kid? So, what do you think they do then if he regresses?
I don't know. I thought they should have been in on these guys this year, meaning Russell Wilson and the quarterbacks that moved this year. I thought they should have been in on that. Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. You know, would they fold their tent next year on it? And who's available then? Like, I don't know. I think they're wedded to the guy.
Garoppolo might be out there.
Oh, there we go. That's what you're smirking about.
If Zach Wilson ends up making a move and Mac Jones doesn't, well, guess what? You might finish last. If that happens. Well,
if you guys had him 6-11, they're going to be vying for that. Eric in Medford. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show. Just one thing I wanted to mention, I think you're missing out on is the not just the Dolphins' weapons, the additions of that, but also the offensive line improvement. You know, Pro Football Focus had the Dolphins as the worst offensive line in football. And if you recall, Tua, he got absolutely blasted last year by the Bills. He missed about six games with a broken rib. He didn't start his full rookie season either. So just one thing to mention, I think he truly makes a big jump.
Didn't the Dolphins just go get a left tackle?
Yeah. Terron Armstead.
So, and the Saints. I mean, your offensive line is taking a step back personnel-wise. We'll see without Shaq Mason. I mean, that's another thing to consider, who will have a better line. But, I mean, I don't know. Boy, if it is a coin flip, you're in deep trouble. It's a coin flip and you're surrounding him with worse coaching and worse pass catchers?
Mike, they lost to Miami twice last year.
It's not a coin flip, but those other things, more than even the playing field in my mind. Carl in Grafton with the Red Sox thought. Hi, Carl. Carl.
First of all, guys, hey, Felger, Mass Murray. Love you talking Dolphins football on Sports Hub. But anyway, the Red Sox, Mass. I know you're a Nets and Company man now, but like, do you think that the Red Sox have a chance against the four other teams that are viable in that division to win? I'll hang up and hear what you have to say. Thanks, guys.
Hell yes. Hell yes. Of course they do. And again, everyone's going to look at the rotation, which I get. You still have Eovaldi, and the bullpen's more important. You won 92 games last year. You made it to the LCS. So this idea that all of a sudden somehow they're not good anymore, I don't know where that's coming from.
Let me ask it this
coming from here.
Let me ask it this way, just quickly. What are the fatal flaws of Toronto, Tampa, and New York?
Well, with Toronto last year in particular was the bullpen.
Okay.
Tampa Bay usually finds a way. I would say Tampa, I still worry about the offense if I was in Tampa, as good as their lineup is and how much better it's gotten. And what was the other one? The Yankees? New York. So I need to see how all that comes together. They were old and slow last year. And Josh Donaldson, as much as I, you know, like the competitiveness.
Boy, is he when I say good Yankee, I put that in air quotes.
Perfect.
Typical a-hole.
Red ass.
Yankee.
Yeah.
But he gets hurt a lot, too. So, like, I don't think there's any slam dunk in the division. I really don't. I mean, if you wanted to say to me, Tampa, fine. The one thing I'll tell you for sure is Baltimore's finishing last.
Well, right. That's a given. That's what I didn't ask.
But no, I think the other four, if you were asking me to pick today, I'd lean Toronto. They're young, they're talented, and those young guys tend to stay healthier, and so I like Toronto. But, you know, they still have to prove to me that they can win.
Brendan and Weymouth on Robert Kraft in the PR game. Yes, Brendan, thanks for hanging on.
No problem. You know, Felger, I just think it's weird. I'm just kind of confused how you want them to draft a receiver, given you know, the value that you usually put on the position, and also the fact that you said multiple times last year that you think, you know, the receivers are good enough. And then one more point. Once the owner starts to get involved, all good things come to an end. The reason they were so successful over the past 20 years was just because not only did they have Brady and Belichick, but Kraft stayed out of it.
Okay. I mean, I think that second piece is it cuts both ways. I mean, I don't know. Wouldn't you want the owner to have stepped in and said, Bill, no, we're keeping Brady. We're paying him. We're going to give him that contract. Like, wouldn't that be good ownership intervention? I mean, at some point, the owner looked at Bobby Greer and said, it's not good enough. I'm going to intervene and swap out my personnel people. Don't you want the owner intervening in that situation?
Yes.
So, like, it's a cliche to say, I don't want the owner involved. He has to be. And on some level, he should be. All right. So that the thing about the receiver is it's right. It's true. I'm not a guy who's into the number one flashy outside receiver. You're right. And I think it's kind of been an overrated position over the years. I just think they do need it. It is the direction of the game. And I'm just sort of playing into the storyline. I'm predicting they're going to do it. So get on board. And what I don't believe is that you shouldn't do something just because you had no success in it in the past. I mean, if they had taken that approach, meaning you can't draft that position, so don't draft it, they never would have drafted Rob Gronkowski. Because Bill took over, and they went years and years of just, you know, throwing draft picks at tight ends, trading up for Daniel Graham, Ben Watson. At the end of the first round, they drafted tight end and tight end and tight end. They really never hit. To the point where they got to 2011 and they drafted those two tight ends, I said, well, these guys are going to suck. They can't draft the position. And lo and behold, they were two excellent players and they nailed it. They drafted the greatest tight end in the history of the game. So I'd say the same thing at the receiver position. You got to keep going whether you've had success at it or not.
So I don't disagree with that assessment overall. But the other element in this thing that I think people conveniently overlook, what are the chances that a receiver is going to come in out of the draft and completely alter your offense?
I think it's given Bill's track record, it's low. But
I'm saying
again,
take Bill's track record out of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Just the idea of a rookie receiver coming in completely changing your team.
It has happened.
No. But hold on, your team and your offense.
So I think there's a chance that it happens. It's happening around the league.
It just happened with Cincinnati last year.
But again, different offenses.
And also, like, Jamar Chase is a thoroughbred.
Top five pick.
Fourth overall pick. It's going to be different than what lands to you at 21. But
I know I'm going back a million years, but it happened with Terry Glenn here.
No, but look, you don't even have to do that.
He was number seven, wasn't he?
Just go around the league. Like, a lot of these guys hit, and they hit early. So, like, I'll pull up the list again of receivers drafted in the last couple of years who you missed on. Just the guys you missed the year you drafted freaking Harry there. I mean, didn't DK Metcalf go off in year one? And didn't Terry McLaurin was a factor in year one? Mm-hmm. Who's a Von Jefferson kid? I think these guys are. So it happens.
Yeah, but again, different offenses.
Well, is it the offense or was it Brady? You know, I think they had a hard time with it here because Brady was so advanced in the offense. He was speaking a different language than the guys coming in. And we talked about this, Maz, that it's a little more conducive now with Mac Jones. They're both sort of starting from the same place. And I'd like to think that there's more of a chance of that working with Mac Jones and Tom Brady just based on that, you know, that piece alone.
Okay, and I'll give you that. I'll grant you that I think the chances are better with Mac Jones. But now you're asking a lot. Now you're asking a rookie receiver come in and be your top receiver?
Yeah. Well, be a factor. Other teams are doing it. The league's doing it.
Then it's change the offense.
It's happening. I mean, this is now what the league is. So I think you have to do it.
Okay, then change the offense. Change the offense.
Maybe they are.
I hope they are.
Like they said, you know, like Murray said, they traded the fullback. They're not going to use the fullback anymore. Here's our pal, Mary in Manchester. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. Hi, guys. So going back to his comments, Kraft's comments, I do think that he's playing to the fans. But I think that's his MO, because I remember during Deflategate when he apologized after Brady got suspended because, you know, he agreed to the fines and the draft picks and all that because he thought Brady wasn't going to get suspended. And then when Brady left, he was perfectly okay with Belichick twisting in the wind and taking the blame for that, even though I think he had just as much to do with it as Belichick. But I don't think he's ever going to fire Belichick. I actually think he's very close to Belichick. And I think that the only scenario that I could envision where Belichick's going to be fired is if Jonathan takes over.
It's shrewd. It's a shrewd comment. And maybe that, you know, who knows how that's playing out there internally. At some point, there's a transition. And how much sway Jonathan has versus Robert, and will you have to think, impact Bill. So, like, that's a totally fair thing to bring up.
Was Tom Brady fired?
Yeah. Yes, he was. But, and again, I think I know what you're driving at. It will never be presented as a firing.
Exactly.
Right? They'll do to Bill what they did with Brady, which is we offered him a contract. We wanted him to stay. He was coming over to my house that night. I thought it was to sign the deal, and he told us he wanted out. I was stunned. And then, so, like, because, yeah, so that I agree with. Like I told you yesterday, we're not going to get a three-sentence press release saying the Patriots have relieved Bill Belichick of his duties. No, it'll be couched in all sorts of, you know,
mutually parted ways.
Exactly. Nonsense. And the thing is, if Bill Belichick's contract is up, they don't have to fire him. It can simply be, we failed to reach terms. His contract was up and we failed to reach terms. And then they really can present it as mutual, but even it's not. Bill will be fired here. He will not walk away on his own terms. That's just my prediction, unless they win a Super Bowl here in the next couple of years. No one gets to walk away on their own terms. Hardly anyone. Bill Walsh did, and he regretted it. It's very rare. So, like, I just think that's coming for Bill Belichick. But you're right. They'll never couch it. They'll never present it that
Colin
way.
Colin updated his standings, by the way, during that segment.
Okay, what is it?
Josh Allen, Tua, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Bills, Dolphins, Jets, Patriots.
Good work, Jimmy.
We continue to go through that. Meanwhile, there was a breaking news today on the Celtics, and it was good, I think. We think. Here's Big Jim Murray with the update. We'll come back and we'll discuss.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Do you believe in moral victories? A good loss? We'll get them next time.
No silver linings here on Felger and Mazz.
Then you are in the wrong place.
You have to accept that, so we...
Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Okay, we've been hearing it all day. Rob Williams, expected to be back within 4 to 6 weeks. Had a procedure on the torn meniscus. It was apparently the lesser of the procedures that he could have had. A deeper procedure or a more, I don't know how to describe that exactly. But
invasive.
A more invasive procedure, thank you, would have knocked him out for the year. He took the lesser procedure. And so he, again, according to the team and report, should be back in 4 to 6 weeks. You buying that?
I'm going to choose to believe it.
Okay.
I want to believe it.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, you put that well. To believe it, you have to take a little bit of a leap, I think, which I know Celtics fans are more than willing to do. I just think the Celtics, and the fact, you know, we hammered this out in the first segment, that the Celtics actually released that. You know, Woj was the first to report it, but it wasn't like an inside report. He just got what the team was going to release before anyone else, I suppose. But the Celtics released it. The Celtics said 4 to 6 week time frame. That should always be, and not you know, especially the Celtics, but any team, you should be leery. The team's trying to sell you something, or trying to sell something, or spin something, or that's just what they do. So that should make you leery, but especially the Celtics, especially, who told us Kevin Garnett was not expected to be out long-term, and it was not a significant injury in 2009. Who told us a couple years later, Shaquille O'Neal would be back, he'll be back, he'll be back, never came back. Who told us that the Kyrie Irving knee injury was just a formality, it was not considered to be a long-term or particularly severe injury, and he would be back for the playoffs. Wrong.
We ended up finding out he had to have screws removed, and it was that whole invasive surgery. It was a mess.
Yeah, a mess. And most recently, Kemba Walker said he'd be back, never was back, and turns out not only was he not back, his knee is complete trash.
Never the same. So I went and found this interview with Brad Stevens in early 2020 when this started up. Kemba Walker had missed his second game.
Thank you, Murray.
Stevens is interviewed. I don't think it's a long-term thing. It was basically a career-altering degenerative knee injury.
He's never been the same.
Never. He's basically out of the league almost.
Basically trashed, washed up, done.
Ah, no big deal.
And the Celtics told you not a career-threatening thing. What was the exact line?
I think that it's not a long-term thing.
It became precisely a long-term thing.
Yeah, tell me you expected that trade to go the way it went, by the way, the Al Horford part of that.
Well,
so,
but either way, I'm talking about the Celtics' track record on this stuff blows. And we get into the psychology of it, which I do find interesting. There's never a bad day in Greenland. And so there's never bad news because everything's awesome with green teamers, and so you just, you know, it's, you know, speak no evil, hear no evil, neener, 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 I'm not hearing it, everything's going to be okay. Like, that's the Celtics fan experience. I think that's what they peddle out of that building, and it's just sort of their default, which is, you know, really foreign to me, and I'm just sort of the opposite, and most of us are more fatalistic, but the Celtics have this mindset that everything's awesome, there's never any bad news. So they always spin these injuries. And so I think they're doing it here too. 4 to 6 was on the low end of whatever was going to happen here. The low end. So if the team's telling me it's the low end, I'm dubious. the subsequent thing is, so Rob Williams is going to be the guy that comes back on the low end of this? That guy? Of all players? And again, he's developed and he's a great player in all of this, but he has not proven himself as durable yet, being able to play through pain or injury or any of these things. So that's going to be the guy all of a sudden. All of a sudden, Rob Williams is going to be the one that picks himself off the mat and comes in here and pulls that thing? I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, I'll believe it when I see it, too. And I'll tell you what, just as you bring it up, the whole 4 to 6 week thing, typically meniscus is 6 weeks. It's not 4 to 6.
They're already selling you.
No, and honestly.
That's what I'm saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So but the estimates that are out there now of 4 to 6, 4 is really optimistic. That's really optimistic.
But they're giving it to you because Celtics fans go, ooh, 4 weeks.
Yeah, I think you should bank on 6, which again brings you back to 2 rounds. Like, maybe you get him back for the conference finals and you see him at the end of April. Like, that to me is a little more realistic.
End of April will be the second round. The playoffs start like on the 11th or something. So, and you know how long it's like 2 weeks per series. So end of April actually does, you know,
in the middle of the second round.
Is second round-ish. Mm. Yeah. But I don't even believe that's going to happen. I just don't. And again, if I'm a Celtics fan, I hope it does. I'm not rooting against it necessarily. I'm very dubious when it comes to the Celtics and these kind of injuries. They've steered us so wrong on so many of them. And you take the cheese every time. That is amazing to be a Celtics fan.
This year, I want to take the cheese.
So, and the second piece to it is, I think it's an interesting theory. I heard Beadle and Zoe talking about it today. And that is, do they have to float out that timeline to keep their team engaged? And are they worried in any way about the psyche of their team? I mean, right now, the buy-in on that team is just so great. And you saw it the other night in Toronto. They almost walked in and beat the Raptors without any of their good players, hardly. And it's all because they're just so invested. If the players believe that Rob Williams is out and won't come back, are they prone to let go of the rope?
Yes.
Yes.
Prone to say, that's it. We can't win without that guy.
More time in the seaport.
And all of a sudden, exactly, all of a sudden they have one more. All of a sudden they stay out a little bit later. All of a sudden it's just, you know, human nature, you let go of the rope. That cliche. And so do they put that out there and do they tell the players that to keep them engaged?
Yes.
Not a bad strategy.
Yes. In fact, I'll tell you what, I think you mentioned this earlier. You might get a pretty good read on it right out of the gate. You got Miami here tonight. Right? I mean, you're playing Miami. It's a good test right out of the chute. And I told you, this is the team I worry about not having Williams for because of the Adebayo factor. So, you know, now I'm presuming, and I haven't heard anything to the contrary, Tatum and Brown are back tonight, Murray?
I believe so.
I haven't seen anything to the contrary either. So Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, lead. This is your opportunity. So now there's a little bit of adversity. Lead. Go out there and compete and win.
All right, so there's your Rob Williams reset. Your thoughts on that, 617-779-0985. Your thoughts on Kraft's comments, whatever the hell you want. Write to you in our long commercial-free segment next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
At the end of the day, it's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Robert Williams underwent surgery Wednesday morning for a torn meniscus in his left knee. Woj is reporting now that Williams is expected to return within 4 to 6 weeks, a timetable that could have him back in the lineup as soon as the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Can the Celtics make a deep playoff run without Time Lord? Wendy?
I think they can.
Really?
I'm a believer, and there's no such thing as minor knee surgery. I know that there's been some players who have had this discectomy or this meniscusectomy where they just take a piece of it off.
This is a family show.
And they come back. Russell Westbrook did it, and he came back in 12 days. And he also needed a follow-up surgery. So that's not great. They do have Daniel Theis, who they traded for
I like Tyson. Even before they started Robert Williams, I thought he was a good kind of small ball center. But the team, Wendy, is so much better with Williams there.
I agree. So I think you're hoping that he can give you some contribution, but you're going to be relying on it. They are so good on the perimeter defensively. Smart. Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum. Size. They work so hard that they will be able to still play good defense. We'll see how he recovers.
Brian Windhorst on the Rob Williams situation. Your thoughts, Mass?
So you hear Windhorst say they're so good on the perimeter, which is true because they're athletic and they're long. But I think what Windhorst is overlooking is that Williams is part of that defense on the perimeter. That is one of the places where he is effective. Now, look, again, you want him near the rim. Don't get me wrong. But when they switch out and he ends up out on the perimeter, guys have trouble shooting over him because of those arms. I mean, he covers so much space with that wingspan.
So, but look, and that's the loss. I agree. And when Max Kellerman says, well, I like Daniel Tice, I think the Celtics should still be really good without Rob Williams and win most of these series without Rob Williams. But Daniel Tice is not the reason. That is not into my calculations whatsoever. What enters my calculations is that you are still better than most of these teams in terms of top-end talent. Brown, Tatum, and not in that order, obviously. And I look at a team like the Miami Heat. Is Miami fully loaded tonight? Everybody in their lineup?
I think so.
They missing anybody?
Let me look it up.
Okay, let's find that out. Presumably you're fully loaded other than Rob Williams. Tatum and Brown are supposed to be back. Al Horford's supposed to be back. So it's the full Celtics lineup minus Rob Williams, the full Miami lineup, which is what presumably we're going to get in the playoffs. Celtics are favored by 5 points. Say, well, they're home. Yeah, well, they're home. Yeah, if you play them in a 7-game series and you have home court, you'll be home. You should be favored to win that series. This is all that I'm talking about.
Heat, arguably the healthiest they've been this entire season. Duncan Robinson and a couple of depth guys are questionable.
Okay, so this is what I'm saying to you. That's what Vegas has. The line opened at -3, and the Celts have actually gone up. They're better than Miami, even without Rob Williams. They should not lose a playoff series to the Miami Heat, especially if they have home court.
Yeah, the Adebayo factor worries me. But again, we'll get to see what it looks like tonight. I just said the idea of having Robert Williams to run up and down the floor with Adebayo, to me, makes a difference.
617-779-0985. Dan in New Hampshire on the Celts. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So I got 2 points. The first point is that I believe Al Horford is the greatest Celtics big man since probably Kendrick Perkins. And my second point is that I'm holding off on the Tatum MVP hype until I see him play at this level when it matters, namely the playoffs, right? We've seen him sort of poop his pants in big moments. I'm remembering the Miami series, which is appropriate for tonight's game. On paper, we look better than the Heat. We look better than the Heat in whatever 2020 bubble.
It's true.
But we got completely embarrassed. So I'm curious for your thoughts on those points. Thank you.
Absolutely. Have you matured? Have you toughened up? You lost to Miami that year because of mindset and toughness and coaching and those things. Spoelstra coach circles around you. Mm-hmm. Remember how they'd throw out the zone?
Yes.
And all of a sudden you didn't know what to do with it. Like those, you didn't lose even on high-end talent that year. So you lost because of those other things. Where are you in terms of those other things? I agree.
Well, you're a couple of years down the road now. You should be more prepared for it.
And Al Horford, the greatest Celtics big man since Kendrick Perkins? I mean, well, maybe, but who's on that list?
I'll tell you, though, as he mentioned Horford,
I take him over Enes Kanter.
Yeah, this crossed my mind briefly earlier. Just the argument for bringing Robert Williams back, Horford factors into. Like, he's up at the end of the year, right? Horford's played well. I never thought they'd get this much out of Horford.
I think it's a buyout or option kind of deal with
Elvin. Buyout for Horford.
But yeah. My point is, you got to maximize this. You don't know if it's going to be the same.
Mario's in Concord for Maz on the Red Sox lineup. Go ahead, Mario.
It won't be.
Mario!
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
All right, 2 quick questions. Do you care if I ask a question about the Celts, too?
Go.
Okay. I agree with the last caller about Al Horford, but like you guys said, who's really been on the list? So I hope he plays good down the stretch. They look hot, and tonight's a great chance to prove it. Also, about the Red Sox. Do you think there should be any loyalty to Xander Bogaerts at that second base position, considering how much he's balled the last, I don't know, I mean, since the World Series and on?
He means shortstop.
Yeah, but either way, should there be a loyalty factor to Xander Bogaerts?
I would say a loyalty factor, yes.
No!
No, hold on, but not with regard to shortstop. Like, if Trevor Story is your better shortstop a year from now, then you play Trevor Story there.
There's any loyalty to him, period, on anything. This is pro sports. He won't show you any loyalty if your contract sucks. He's not going to stay because he's loyal to you.
So when I say loyalty, though, I mean, look, if he can't play, he can't play and you let him go. I'm saying all things being equal, is there value in you keeping the guy in your franchise? And I say yes. Yes. I think he's a different kind of cat when it comes to the fabric of your team.
Okay, but look, that's an analysis of what he brings to your team.
Sure.
And you're going to pay him accordingly because he will bring you value to your team. You're not doing it based on loyalty.
So that's fair.
I mean, and I know this is like a...
No, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe we're, again, just parsing words. But that's a guy that you extend yourself for. What do you give him? Give me the... Can we look up the biggest shortstop contracts in baseball?
They're all between 30 and 35, basically 33, 34, 35 million. Carlos Correa, Francisco Lindor, Corey Seager. They all make, in that order, make 35, 34, 33.
So, again, very good. So, I mean, let's get Lindor signed 10 years, $341 million.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to do that for Xander Bogaerts?
No way, not at his age. Lindor was younger, I think, though.
Do you include Fernando Tatis? 14 years, $340 million.
Right. So his average comes in lower.
24.
Yeah. And he was really, really young. So, and they bought up some arbitration years and stuff like that. So my answer is no.
Corey Seager, you had it 10, 325.
Mm-hmm. Are
they doing that for Xander Bogaerts?
So that's the one that, no, they're not.
So then he's gone.
No, they're not going to do that. Not necessarily.
You don't think that's out there for him?
I'm not sure there will be because I think there are greater, like the thing about Lindor and who's the other one, Correa, good defenders, gold glove defenders. And people don't.
But Correa only got 3 years. Isn't that kind of surprising? 3 years, 105.
Yes. And they're really one. And he's an opt out after every year. So it's really could be a 1 year deal. He could opt out at the end of the season, hit the market again.
Corey Seager was 27. Don't I feel that Xander Bogaerts is older than that?
2 years older.
He's 2 years older. So that's a factor.
Yep. A little bit. Yeah, so again, I could see, look, here's how I look at it.
Well, I mean, it's a factor if you're talking about a 10-year deal.
Right.
You know, anyway, go ahead.
So I think you try to give him somewhere in the range of six and call it six and 190 and see where it gets you. And that's
how does that get that done?
I'm not sure it does.
How does it get it done?
I'm not sure it does. Bogaerts would have to stay. He would have to want to stay. And I think he does, but I don't know whether he would take that.
Okay.
And honestly, if it came to him or Devers and you really pushed me, and I can only keep one, I'm probably keeping Devers. Younger, left-handed. I mean, you can't get around the lefty bat thing. Really, really important.
Does position matter to you? Shortstop more valuable than a corner guy?
Not now, because you have Story. So this is another reason they signed Story, to give them leverage against Bogaerts. If Bogaerts walks in, they can't come to a deal, they have a guy to plug in there.
Okay, we've got a little bit of Celtics, a little bit of Red Sox. We'll reset our Bruins thought off of that atrocity last night. Reset our Robert Kraft takeaway on day two, following his comments down in Florida. We'll do that all in 90 seconds after Murray gets you updated. No commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.